Live from
welcome to New York.
This is
the Just End the Suffering podcast.
Wait for the win.
Got it! Oh! He broke his ankle!
Follow me for freedom!
Y'all ready for this?
Here's your host, Mike Phillips.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to this episode of the Just and the Suffering podcast. It's New York Sports Talk and Long Suffering Fan. Your host, Mike Phillips. I got a good show for you this week. We got two this week. We're going to give you a rare Sunday drop here on the podcast. We're going to give you the Masters preview. We got the first golf major of the season coming up starting Thursday at Augusta. We'll be joined by Dan DeMarti at the PGA Tour. In just a bit, we're going to preview the event. All the fun stuff there. Make sure you locked in the podcast week's 2 minute drill, as well as tell you why MLB has so many scandals early in the season. And we're about 10 days into the baseball season. It feels like there's a new one popping up every day. We'll talk about all that at the end of the podcast. Like you hear on the Just the Suffering podcast, feel free to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Spotify, Amazon, all usual suspects. Simply search for Just End the Suffering, your favorite podcast platforms. You can find episodes there. Feel free to your feedback and starting as well with the podcast even better going forward. Check out the YouTube page, Mike Phillips on YouTube. Video version of the conversation with Dan is up on YouTube again, Mike Phillips on YouTube. Without any further ado, let's get to our opening tip. We're going to recap the Final Four. We're going to go ahead and get those two games covered, set up the national championship matchup here that's coming up here right after this. All right, we are back here. Opening tip here on the podcast. We're going to get into a Final Four exclusive recast, but I normally don't do this with Troy because I was turning around from Saturday to Monday is pretty quick. But since we are putting the master spot out today, we're going to give you my thoughts here on the Final Four spots here. We'll recap these two games. Start out with the first one, NC State-Purdue. Credit to the Wolfpack here. They fought very hard in this game. Had a good defensive game plan against Zach Edey. They were basically sending doubles at him right away, either DJ Burns or a couple other guys just sort of man him up and send guards in to try and take the ball off from him. Held him down early by his standards. Quiet game for Zach Edey, 20 points, 12 rebounds overall, but NC State could not hit enough shots. Their center run ends. Purdue wins 63-50. Key this game is a 12-1 run late in the second half. An important way to end here, sort of tie the Murph Fletcher lawyer just prior to the last media timeout, basically put the game away here. Think you take away here, obviously NC State, magical run. A lot of fun for them to get here the Final Four, but the odds of them beating both Purdue and all like UConn were slim, so I felt like the clock struck midnight. Not surprised there. The Boilermakers, though, showed some impressive guts in this game. They have seen them struggle this year when games have been tight down the stretch. They need to get out of what they normally do, but credit to them. They played their game. They got the ball down low to Edey. They hit 10 threes, including that dagger I mentioned about Butcher Lawyer. They're on to the title game, trying to win their first national championship here. Now we'll go to the other game, UConn-Alabama. This is a lot of fun to watch. Alabama was able to challenge UConn offensively for a long time in this game. They went 11-21 from three. And you figure, hey, if they're going to do that, this game's going to be close. It was close far longer than Huskies used to in this tournament. It was still a game with about 8 minutes left. They do pull away, though, late, win by 14 points, making it 11 straight double-digit NCAA tournaments for UConn, dating back to the first round against Iona last year. Also, a well-balanced scoring attack for UConn. All but 786 points came from the starting five. All had 12 figures. Cam Spencer had a big day from the perimeter. Stephon Castle led the way with 21 points. Huskies deserve a lot of credit for finally slow Alabama down. We talked about Alabama before on the podcast. They like to go up and down the floor. They play the NBA-style basketball where it's layups or threes and nothing else pretty much. They only made four shots in the mid-range in the whole tournament prior to Saturday night. Good job by UConn, though. They slowed them down. They played a much more UConn-paced game. They still outshot them to get to the Monday night. They hit 10 threes. They went 10-25 from beyond the arc. Speaking of Monday night, we're in for a very fun title game as the Huskies and the Boilermakers square off. UConn is favored by 6.5, which is a lot for a team with two number one seeds and a national title game, but I actually take the points of Purdue here. The biggest reason why you do that, Zach Edey, in my opinion, secret weapon is the conditioning and ability to, you know, stay on the floor for pretty much the whole game. Here are his minute totals in the NCAA tournament for Zach Edey. 31 against Georgia Southern in the first round. 27 against Utah State in the second round. Then Sweet 16, 38 against Gonzaga. Elite Eight, 39 against Purdue, 40 minutes against Tennessee on, or against NC State on Saturday night. Not only is he not getting into foul trouble, he's managing to play the entire game when it's in the balance, which is massive since he's the biggest difference maker in a title game scenario here. Donovan Klingon, who's the guy who's going to be guarding Edie most of the game, in comparison, he's not played more than 29 minutes a game yet. They played Samson Johnson, basically, the other 10 minutes a game, roughly. UConn's plus minus is significantly lower when you know they don't have Donovan Klingon on the floor. Purdue should win those minutes if Klingon sits, and that will keep them right in this game. We should have a fun one on Monday night. I still lean UConn here, but either team winning here will be a satisfying champion. UConn either being the first defending champ since 2007 to repeat. Purdue becoming the first Big Ten team to win in 25 years to win their first national championship with the most dominant player in college basketball right now. Definitely two worthy champions here. We'll see who emerges on top Monday night. We'll be back with Troy later this week to talk about it all. But up next, we'll talk some Masters with Dan DeMartini right after this. All right, we are back here getting ready for the Masters on the podcast. Joining me today to break it all down, great friend of the podcast. He works for the PGA Tour. Dan DeMartini is here. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing great, Mike. Glad to be back and glad we are fully entrenched in golf season.
Absolutely. Definitely a fun time for sure. So catch me up. I was having a little busy with the March Madness and the start of baseball season here. What have I missed in the golf world so far?
You know, there's been some really interesting events going on the PGA Tour right now, and some names that have honestly paid their dues and have been fully rewarded. You know, just even the last 2 weeks, like Steven Yeager winning this past year, a name that has been on a lot of leaderboards over the years and never truly has had that marquee finish, and he finally got it at the Texas Children's Open. And even the week before, one of my absolute favorite people, Peter Malnati, winning the Valspar Championship. Two guys who have just, you know, grinded it out and just, you know, you hear about the Scotty Schefflers and the Jordan Spieths of the world, but, you know, these are the kinds of guys that, you know, golf and being on the PGA Tour is a fight for them. It's something they truly care about. And, you know, we've seen that a lot this year. We've seen a lot of names that have emerged and said, you know, there's more money than ever on the line. There's more opportunity to build a career, and they've stepped up and done it. And, you know, the stars are always going to be there, and we're just getting in the thick of things here now. It's golf season. Usually for the casual fan, you know, obviously the diehard fans are watching year round, but usually the Masters is when people really start getting back on the golf course themselves. And this is kind of the unofficial start to the year. And so, you know, for the casuals out there and those that are just, you know, really craving that golf fix, you know, it's a great time to get back into it. And you've seen, if you want, go on and watch some of the great highlights from some of the events and some of these amazing finishes that we've had already. So you've had an amateur win this year. You've had Scottie Scheffler win this year. You've had marquee events, back-to-back wins for Scottie Scheffler at the Players' Championship, 50th anniversary. And then you've had the guys like Peter Malnati who have, you know, had career-defining moments. So if you've been dialed in, you've definitely seen some great golf, but here we are with, you know, the first major of 2024, and we're ready to roll.
Absolutely here. Now, let's catch up on, like, the defending champion, Jon Rahm. Last year, he wins by four strokes over Brooks Koepka and Phil Mickelson, playing very well so far this year. What do you think of Jon Rahm's chances to repeat?
Yeah, I mean, Jon Rahm obviously can always repeat. He can win any tournament. And, you know, he's a fantastic player. And, you know, I'm kind of looking at this saying the only thing that in my mind that's going to be really interesting for even just the casual fans is, you know, this time last year, he already had three individual wins under his belt and was playing some of the best golf of his absolute career. And from the calendar year start, had played eight events. Now this year, playing elsewhere, you know, he's played a few less events. But it'll be interesting to see if he is able to then, you know, with a little bit less event play, is he going to be able to be more fresh and ready to come out and win at Augusta and you know, kind of retain the green jacket again for another year? Or is it, you know, just going to, there's too many other big names and too many other just hungry players out there that are just going to catch him and be able to kind of put themselves in a better position. So really fascinating to see now. You know, all these players coming from wherever they play around the world, and whatever format they play, all meeting it at the Masters. And it's a really, really interesting melting pot of professional play and different kind of competitive play and different formatting play. So I'm really curious to see it. The casual golf fan, even the diehard golf fan, everybody should be really curious to see all these guys come back together again and, you know, and really see, you know, the PGA Tour is bringing in quite a few really good young, hungry players. You know, a couple that we'll get to during sleepers, but the Jake Knapps of the world and Ludwig Aubert, who, you know, can really make a name for themselves at the Masters this year, and you got to watch out for them. So, a very, very exciting time, but once again, you can't count out anybody, you know, any of the guys that you saw on the leaderboard in the top 10 last year. Augusta is one of those courses that, you know, these guys, they know it. The stars all know it. They have dreamed of playing it. They come ready to play. That's why it's always so rare when, you know, an unknown name wins it. Normally you're getting a pretty big top star that's going to put that jacket on. So, you know, and Rahm definitely sits in the mix of that.
Yeah, for sure. Here, let's go to a little bit of uncertainty as we're recording here on April 2nd. The Tiger Woods thing is flowing around because he probably flew in this week, went for a secret round at the Masters, and it sounds like he may be trying to see, you know, I might resurface here and play the Masters this year. Like, obviously, like, it would be remarkable after the accident, all that stuff, he's in trying, even playing golf, but if he does play, can he make the cut? I feel like the days of Tiger winning these Masters are over, but can he, like, hang around for the weekend?
I mean, it really depends. I think the only thing, and this is just my gut reaction, Tiger Woods can always win any event. He's obviously had it's well documented, you know, even at Genesis, he wasn't feeling well. There were a multitude of factors. If he's going to go out on the golf course, he's only going to go if he thinks he has a chance to win. He really is, and I still believe that. You know, I see his swing. He knows that golf course inside and out. There's no, you know, pin location or tee location that can catch this guy off guard. He just knows this golf course. I mean, this is who Tiger is. There's no more defining moments in golf than seeing Tiger at Augusta. So I truly believe that, you know, that it will take everything going his way. He'll have to get off to a fast start on Thursday. There's no, if he's won over or even or anything, like, he needs to see some very, very positive numbers quickly. And he needs to go low on Thursday, get that confidence, and he needs to hold on. Do I think weather factors could help if it's one of those first couple rounds where it's rainy or, you know, the course is maybe even if it's, you know, blazing hot and the greens are rolling incredibly fast, does his experience get him through to the cut? Maybe. But look, I'm just saying every year that goes on, we all know that, you know, if he's going to go out there, he's not going to go out and put himself in a bad position where he's like just not fit to play. So if, I know we don't really know at this moment, there's still rumors going on out there if he's going to play or not. If he plays, he fully expects to make a cut and compete. Will it happen? I mean, there's got to be, I think there's more and more of a variable situation for him where he just needs some things to go right, and it absolutely has to start with a fast first round. And then the pressure's off of him on Friday. So, you know, just gotta watch out on Thursday. And I'm sure if he plays, all eyes will be on him, and it will be a fascinating mix to see that, to see Rahm, to see McIlroy, who's, you know, obviously getting a lot of love right now when it comes to, you know, kind of who the favorites are, and then seeing Scottie Scheffler, who is just this constant shark in the water. He's the nicest guy ever, but it's like, you know, I hate to say it, like, when it comes to the competitive side, like, there's not too many golfers that would feel comfortable with Scottie Scheffler like a stroke behind with four to play, you know? So he's a shark.
Yeah, he definitely is here. And let's take a look here at some players to watch the Masters. Give me some guys we should keep an eye on here you think could make some noise this week.
Yeah, so, you know, I it would go without saying, but, you know, I'm very, very high on Scottie Scheffler. If I'm just going to go with, you know, who I think I have the most confidence in, of who I've seen, who's going to be ready to play, who's going to be, give themselves a chance just with the consistency of ball striking and hitting greens and reg and, you know, giving himself never really having too many bad putts, meaning like he's leaving himself really bad second putts. It's got to be Scheffler. So very high there. A couple of guys that I would kind of call like mid-tier sleepers. You know, I genuinely believe that Augusta requires, you know, your accuracy. You can't get away with just bombing the ball there. You have to put it in spots. And this past year, I think he's played his absolute best golf, and that's Brian Harman. Love that guy. Really very high on just his momentum coming into this event, giving himself a chance. I feel like over the last few years, he's always kind of, even if he fades a little bit later, I feel like he's always around the top 10. Like, I constantly see Harman hovering in like the fourth, fifth spot. So why not this be Brian Harman's year? He's had huge wins this past year, and he's playing some incredible golf. So I'm very high on Brian Harman. I'm also very high, obviously, on Sungjae Im. It seems to me like some of the more international players that come to that event, it just kind of fits again with incredible iron play and approaches to the greens and the bigness of the moment. Just they seem to embrace it and just stay focused and give themselves a really good chance. You know, Hideki winning a couple of years ago, you know, you have to keep an eye on him as well. Hideki is one of those guys who does not need at all ever to have be like, oh, well, he finished like third last week and seventh the week before, so he's definitely prime. He can come out of nowhere. And even if he's missed like two cuts in a row or just hasn't been playing great any given week, and he's shown that that's a course that fits his game. And it's the same thing like at WM Phoenix Open. Like Hideki, that course fits him, and that's why he's always in the mix. So, you know, I would highly, highly think that Hideki, Sungjae, and Brian Harman are guys to watch.
That sounds good to me. Definitely keep an eye on that here. In terms of sleepers, I know you said these are quasi-sleepers you mentioned here a second ago, but the sleeper front?
You know, I'm talking a deep sleeper, and this is me just kind of putting it way out there. A guy that, unless you've been watching very closely, you might not know the name. His name is Mathieu Pavon. He goes, I think, by Mathieu Pavon. But he's a French golfer who has been playing on the PGA Tour this season, previously on the DP World Tour. I think he's got ability to play on both. But he, obviously, early this year won his first PGA Tour event in kind of very dramatic fashion. It's a great highlight for those that want to watch it from earlier this year. I believe it was at Farmers. And he kind of just ever since has just kind of come out of nowhere. I think he finished third or in the top 10 at Pebble Beach, and he had another top 10, a name that most people wouldn't know. And I'm pretty sure he's not anywhere near the top of the kind of the odds to win category. But if you're looking for a deep sleeper, another guy who is having arguably the best year of his professional golfing life. He's not super young. I think he's around 30, 31 years old. So like he's got some experience. This is his first chance to play the course. And once again, you never know what you're going to get. This is a course that seems to be the guys that know it the best and know where to put it. I have more favor, but maybe he rolls into this with just saying, you know, my expectations are low and I'm just going to go out and enjoy myself. And maybe that works in his favor. So keep an eye on him, and he'd be my deep sleeper pick for sure.
All right, that sounds good here. So if you had to pick a winner right now, if you had to put your chip out here and say, this is who I think will win the Masters, like who you got?
Yeah, Scottie Scheffler. I'm just not going to pick against him right now. And I know that the McIlroy story, there's a lot of people that are high on him right now and, you know, just want him to get that experience to get put on the green jacket and complete the career grand slam and do all of those things. I just think that even if Scotty is, we've seen it multiple times, even if he gets off to like, you know, the leaders are at four under and Scotty's two over after day one. And even if he's six or seven shots back, he just keeps coming, you know, and he just keeps going and he just finds a way to get in the groove. And all of a sudden he's seven under, you know, through 11 holes and around, and you're just like, whoa, all of a sudden he just marched up into the top five. And then once he's there, it's just, you know, he's going to find a way to get his name at the top. And I just think he's the best player in the world. And I just think that he is, He's got such a great golf, you know, attitude. He doesn't react to poor shots in a way that is detrimental to his next swing. You see other players that get really frustrated when they make a bogey or miss a putt that they think. He just kind of looks and he just says, oh man, okay, that broke left. All right, here we go, next shot. And that mental fortitude and that strength that he shows when he's playing golf to just move on is so, so important. And he has the fire to win, but the clarity to say next shot matters. So I'm all on Scottie Scheffler, and it's going to be a long time, I feel like, until otherwise. The only other guy that could be really interesting in my mind that I kind of thought he's playing best golf of his career the past year or two is Wyndham Clark. I really enjoy watching him play golf, and I think he's even more fiery, and I really, really enjoy, you know, his whole story of and kind of emergence in this, you know, I'm a top tier player. So I would enjoy watching Wyndham Clark win at Augusta as well.
All right, Dan, thanks for all the time. Really appreciate it. People want to follow you on social media. How can they do that?
Sure. I'm at DMARC207, and, you know, I will be active. This is NFL draft season. You're going to have some of that coming up soon. And, you know, I'm just praying that that my beloved Indianapolis Colts sign a corner, a safety, and a wide receiver. And they don't rely on the draft to solve all those problems, because everybody saw how C.J. Stroud cooked us in that final game of the regular season. Our secondary needs work, and we haven't necessarily addressed it. So I'm a little scared going into it. But, hey, it's a big year for the Jets. You guys have it's been fun to watch them go all in. They really have, fixing their line, and I really hope that just for the sake of the balance of the NFL, I do hope if the Colts don't win that the Jets get one. So I'm rooting for you guys too.
I appreciate that, Dan. Thanks for all the time today as well. Enjoy the Masters.
All right, you too. Bye bye.
The 2 minute drill.
All right, 2 minute drill time here, and the baseball season is underway. We're about 10 days in. Sure, feels like we're spending a lot more time talking about things besides the baseball on the field. There's a lot of scandals here. So I ran a point here. I want to listen to a clip here from Angels broadcaster Wayne Randazzo. He's crushed the league. He got upset that MLB retroactively changed a hit to an error on first baseman Nolan Schanuel earlier in the season. Schanuel had an impressive on-base streak to begin his career going. It's now retroactively over 30 games. That just set Randazzo off here. So let's listen to his complaints, courtesy of Awful Announcing pulled the clip on Twitter. So here is Wayne Randazzo on the Angels broadcast the other day.
Negative story after negative story, scandal after scandal, a fiasco in Oakland. You have these ridiculous-looking jerseys. You have the MLBPA challenging the league about the pitch clock today because of constant pitcher injuries. And yet, not to mention your global superstar is embroiled in a betting scandal. But on top of all of that, you have a young player trying to make a name for himself who has come up and reached base safely in every single game that he has played. And the league allows this scoring change to go on to end his streak, kill this story, a positive story that's happening in Major League Baseball. It is an absurdity.
Yeah, I mean, when you think.
Yeah, absurdity is a good way to put the situation around baseball right now. So let's reset we got here. First, Oakland, which we know is trying to move to Las Vegas, the A's, because John Fisher decided he does not want to stay in Oakland for whatever reason. He wants to get a stadium built for him in Vegas. Instead of negotiating an agreement to stay in Oakland beyond this season, just stay in the interim, they are moving to Sacramento. MLB signed off on this. A 10,000-seat AAA stadium. They're playing in the next 4 years in Sacramento, the new home Vegas, which, by the way, no guarantee it gets finished, because there's a lot of hubbub about, you know, the law, about the politicians getting involved, the money not being there. No guarantee it gets built. But for now, we're going to have a Major League Baseball team play 81 games a year at a 10,000-seat stadium. And the owner, John Fisher, is saying, you know, it'll be cool to see Aaron Judge homer in Sacramento against my team because you could be so close to the action. That's great. That's fantastic. And you know for a fact that this team is going to lose so much money because they're going to be selling so few tickets compared to the rest of the league that a lot of owners are saying already, oh, they're going to start tanking again because they have no reason to try. That's great. You're going to Oakland continue to be a feeder system for the rest of the league for 4 years at least. That's fantastic. You have the jersey fiasco, which you already talked about on the podcast. They still have not addressed this. I am stunned we got to the season and we have not addressed these jerseys. I've now seen them in person a couple of times. I've gone to a couple of Met games already. I went to the team store and looked at them. They are worse than we could possibly imagine. The material feels cheap as hell. The lettering is still too small, and I've seen it in a couple of examples in the store where the lettering is not aligned properly in all cases, where the arcing is not correct. It's very bad looking. We've already seen guys in Houston in warmer climates that are dripping in sweat. It makes the road glaze look really, really bad and very cheap material, very bad look, and they still have not addressed this. Wayne Randazzo mentioned the league and the Players Association sending out dueling statements on Saturday, reacting, basically blaming each other about the pitch clock leading to more pitching injuries. We already had a bunch of them in spring training. A few more went down at the start of the season. Yankee reliever Jonathan Weisiger is out for the year. Shane Bieber's out for the year with Tommy John surgery. Spencer Strider might be heading that way. Both the league and the union feel the best strategy to address the problem is flinging insults at each other over a press release instead of, you know, sitting down in the room and talking about it. It's to be decided whether, you know, is it the pitch clock's fault? Is it guys throwing too hard? Which, by the way, the teams are encouraging to chase velocity and spin at all costs. Either way, we're flinging angry, lurid press statements out in the media. Feels like these times more than just getting ready for the next CBA fight in 2026. They're actually trying to, you know, fix a problem. We have the Otani scandal, which we previously covered here. And by the way, still waiting for that law enforcement agency, anyone to investigate this massive theft the Interpreter committed. I'm still waiting on that. We haven't had that happen yet. And this league investigation, not convinced it's actually going to happen. We'll see. Wayne did not mention the fiasco at the Dodgers, the Otani's first home run at Dodger Stadium a couple days ago. We saw Dodger security, strong arm fan, taking a lowball offer of 2 signed caps, a signed bat, and a signed jersey for a ball that would have been worth over $100,000 if she took it to auction. Security basically forced her hand. They separated her from her husband, who was trying to wait and say, hey, don't take a bad deal. And they threatened not to authenticate the ball if she didn't take their offer, which would have killed the value of it. So basically say, take what we're giving you and like it, or else. On top of that, we have Mr. Pinocchio himself, Shohei Ohtani, telling the media that, yeah, I met the fan. It was great. And so nice she gave you the ball back. All the problem is that never happened. So Ohtani's got a habit of lying now about things. So it makes you wonder what else he's telling you the truth about. So great job there for the Dodgers. There is no league right now that gets its own way more than Major League Baseball. It's sad because the on-field product is so, so good. A lot of these wounds are self-inflicted, too. The jersey is self-inflicted. The Ohtani stuff is self-inflicted. The bending over backwards with John Fisher is self-inflicted. They shoot themselves in the foot so often, it's absurd. It's been a week. What the hell are we doing here? And with that, I want to end the show for you. I want to thank Dan DeMartini for coming on here to talk some Masters and get ready for the event this week. Should be a fun tournament at Augusta, as always. If you want to get stuff like this podcast, including my look at Julius Randle's injury and how it impacts Knicks postseason hopes, check out the blog over at justinthesuffering.wordpress.com. So check out the Sky Guys podcast as well. Episodes 10 to 11 of Season 3 of The Bad Batch, that podcast is out now. Episode 12 is coming later this week. Pete will be back with us for that. So again, subscribe to the podcast. As I mentioned at the top of the show, same platforms for us, apply for Sky Guys as well. Just follow me on social media, mphillips331. That's mphillips331. That's going to do it here for us on the first half of the podcast this week. Back later on, couple of new things coming up here. Troy Morelli back with me later this week to recap the National Championship game and Carlisle March Madness coverage. We'll do the Curb Your Enthusiasm finale with Martino Puccio and more. So I hope we have a better week than Marlins fans.